Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM Sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Listening to Legit Bat Podcast. And now your host, Jim, Jan, and Bland.
Well, hello there. Welcome back to Legit Bat. If this is your first time listening, I'm Joe. Jen is with me tonight, and so is Ben. Yay. I don't have my soundboard up today. We're doing kind of a swapcast type of thing, and we got JT follows JC. He's the host of that channel on YouTube. I'll put a link in the notes. And also his podcast, Decoding Babylon. And you can find that on all podcast players, I believe. I was searching it up today, and it looks like it's pretty much everywhere. I learned about this guy through my brother, Josh Monday. Shout out Josh Monday, Christian and Conspiracy Podcast. And I listened to the show you guys did a couple weeks ago, and it was really interesting because what we're going to talk about tonight, or at least start out with, we'll see where we go, but is basically how we're in the thousand-year reign of Satan right now. And that makes sense in so many different ways, not just from the biblical stance. Like, think of, you know, of that what you will. But we've talked a lot about manipulated history and how there's some people think there's like 1,000 years that was deleted from history and they were adding that extra one. So we're actually in the year like 1024. That's a different rabbit hole to go down, but there were so many different connections when I was listening to that show that I wanted to get you on and talk about that. So why don't you give us a quick, you know, intro of yourself and what you do over there on your channel, and we'll get going.
Yeah. So, we talk a lot about that. And just to correct a small thing you said is that there's a millennial reign of Jesus. And then there's a short time when Satan is released after that to deceive the nation. So we really don't know how long the period is that Satan's deceiving people. And that's why a lot of people have like, it's a tough passage in the Bible. Like, what does that mean? But we'll get more into that. But yeah, my name is JT, or Joe as yours is, but I go by JT online. And I'm a Christian guy, but I'm also a conspiracy theorist. So like, I see everything everyone else sees. And so obviously I'm trying to interpret that through, you know, a biblical lens. And I believe that Jesus is the truth. And when you find out everything's a lie, eventually it leads you back to, hey, this kind of keeps coming up again. And so many things make sense with that lens. But yeah, I'm on, you know, TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, all the things.
TikTok. No, just kidding.
I started there. It was that. I mean, like I said, TikTok sucks. I mean, I'll say that right now. But it was funny. It's like the TikTok has given people the ability to go from like guys like me who had 3 followers to like 1,000 in a week and then 100,000 in like 2 months. And then before you know it, I'm like making videos. Like, but I probably would not have done that if I didn't get, you know, like the following and then eventually start a podcast and stuff like that.
Yeah. I've heard TikTok is a great, I see tons of funny TikToks, and there's actually a lot of, you know, conspiratorial things on there too, which is funny. They don't seem to censor as much, which is weird since they always say it's China owned, but who?
Well, it's more now though.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. Well, it's election season, so of course it's going to be a little more turned on over there.
Yeah,
it's better as far as following, though. I mean, I would imagine a lot of that is bots, or from what I've heard. Who knows? I mean, we don't have that big of a following on Instagram, but I figure at least half of them are bots anyway, because you look at the engagement and you're like, that doesn't match the numbers. So
yeah, I would say that when you see a big number on Instagram, it's generally more real people than fake people. But on TikTok, I would say if somebody has 100,000 followers, it's probably about 70% bots. And if it's not, they don't really show your videos to your followers. And I think it's the double-edged sword of TikTok, is the fact that if you post, they're showing your videos to people who don't follow you, and then you can increase your following. But in that, like I said, it's a double-edged sword. So if you have a following, if they're showing your videos to people, you know, showing your videos to everyone, well, then the people if they only showed it with people as followers, well, then the people with 3 followers would never get any of the videos shown. So they allow you to get viral, but they, like I said, it really doesn't matter. It's all a shell game. And I think it's not owned by China. I think it's owned by like the CIA.
Yeah. That's I've also heard that one too. They do kind of throttle you at a certain point too, where they kind of cap you and then wait for you.
Yeah.
I got banned.
I've been banned. Yeah. Yeah.
I got nicked the other day for something that was totally wrong. I think it was the AI algorithm, and I requested a review, and they actually overturned it. They put a restriction on my Facebook and Instagram accounts for something really stupid from a year ago, and it was not a good strike. Like, they were really going to come down, and I was like, no, it was a joke. And they were like, oh, you're right, it was a joke. Okay, you can have it back. It's stupid, but, you know, we try to work around what we can on these without self-censoring too much, still try to play by the rules, but you know, finagle our little message in there anyway. It's what you got to do. So where do you want to start out on this? So for anybody who's not familiar with general biblical theology or ideas, why don't you, because I'm sure your audience is a lot more, you know, in tune with what you're talking about, but we do have Christians on our listenership, and I don't know why, but thank you.
Probably because you and Ben
talk
about it all the time. And you guys were raised uber Christian.
Yeah. So there's a lot of, we do have a lot of Christians like Drew Misson from Missing the Point, and you know, some other ones, but,
you're friends with Josh Monday, who's obviously a good Christian.
Yeah. And, why don't you give us for the people, like, treat it like somebody who doesn't really know biblical theology or the ideas that you're going to be talking about, and kind of give us a breakdown of why you're putting this idea out there that we might be in the reign of Satan right now, because it's very interesting.
Okay, so I was raised as, like, in a good Christian family. We went to church every Sunday. I ended up going to, like, Christian school, like, from, like, middle school all the way through college. I graduated from Liberty University. And so I kind of grew up in the age of the Left Behind stuff, you know. So obviously, like, you know, when you grow up Christian, you're going to not want to go to hell, obviously. So you accept Jesus, right? Like, why wouldn't you? Like, you want to go to heaven or hell? I want to go to heaven. So then you get saved, you get baptized. And then as a lukewarm Christian, you're kind of following the path. You're trying to, but you're kind of like dancing on the line. You're like, what's okay to do as somebody who wants to go to heaven? And you're kind of doing, it's almost like when you get a job and it's like, you're going to do just enough not to get fired. So like, that's kind of how like most of the people live.
Don't they call that fire insurance in the Christian community?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, yeah, like obviously, yeah, you need that, right? Because just like if you need health insurance just in case you get cancer one day, you need that fire insurance because, hello, you will die one day. So, but I think a lot of us have kind of like followed that path of the American dream, which is like, we're raised in a Christian nation and you try to do all the things, you have an idea what things are supposed to look like until 2020. And then the world just seems like the veil has kind of been lifted. You kind of see that the place you lived on, you thought was so stable, is unstable. And then maybe like you finally, you know, there's always those hints of like, hey, they're putting microchips in people's hands over in Europe. That's weird. That sounds like Left Behind. They're doing all this stuff. And then like, you know, obviously you get into like the pandemic stuff and then the election stuff. You're like, wow, it does seem like the world has shifted big time. Could this be like living out the book of Revelation?
And so how much of that do you think, not to interject too much, but how much do you think of that is just like a mockery of scripture? Like the chip in the hand type of thing is so on the nose that it makes me think it's not like that. That's not the mark of the beast or anything, because it's so in your face and they know people are going to notice it. So,
well, I'm with you. I mean, I'm kind of with you now more so. It's kind of almost like that. If that scares you enough to get right with God, I would say, well, God can use all things together for our good, you know? So like, is that literally the mark of the beast? And at this point, I would probably say no. And I think that many people, as we've been kind of waking up, we're saying, it seems so obvious that this is the end times that maybe you're underestimating your enemy, who is very crafty. This obviously the devil would be smarter than we are. So if it seems so obvious, well, part of you could say there's biblical passages about like how like in Isaiah that says that you'll look, but you won't see, you'll hear, but you won't understand. So you'd like, you see all these people going the complete opposite direction. So you wonder, maybe this is just a complete spiritual blindness. So, I mean, so there is that possibility, but yeah, when you consider that all the Christians are looking for the rapture right now, right? That they all believe this is about to happen. And then you kind of like look into like, well, I mean, obviously, like when you look into like Joel Osteen's churches and like the big churches and, you know, the bigger the congregation, the more likely that it's like, it's not really the message of Jesus, because Jesus did, you know, by the end, he only had like one person with him. You know what I mean? So like that's the big numbers are not necessarily pointing to what's correct. And so if everybody's saying this one thing, remember, like the broad road is leads to destruction. And then the narrow path, the narrow gate is what leads to life. So it was like, it was a point of like, I went down the rabbit hole and I started to make videos about the end times. But then meanwhile, as I was doing that, you know, like I said, you get a, you know, you start getting a TikTok following. It's like, you got to make some videos. So like, I was interested in all the conspiracy. So I was making videos about everything. MK Ultra, I was making videos about weird messages in the movies and the Marvel movies. I was making videos about like Freemasonry stuff, architecture, all kinds of weird things. And then people are starting to say like, hey, you should look into the mud flood. And I was like, okay, that's weird. But then you start looking into a little bit and you're like, I'll just put that aside. I really don't know what that means. That's weird. The orphan trains, weird stuff like that. The sane asylums. Again, I'm going to push that off until later. And then I don't know what it was. It was something about like, I started to get really interested in, I did a video about the Hoover Dam. And that was one of my first real big videos about the symbolism, about the angels and all the weird stuff associated with Hoover Dam. And then so as a guy from Virginia, I started to look out west and I have some family out there, but I started to look around like the landscape, like the Grand Canyon, all the rock formations that are named after Shiva, Ra, Osiris, Isis. And you're like, that's weird. And then you find out they found like potentially Egyptian stuff in the Grand Canyon, or maybe even like, you know, Hindu,
The Grand Canyon is literally a giant rabbit hole you can go down. There is some weird stuff down there.
Yes, 100%. But it's more like once I started to do podcasts about it and I started talking about it and I started to say, you know what? The rock formations out west don't look like they're formed by wind or rain or rivers, they look like things that have been melted. And so with that mindset, you're like, what did that? Well, if you actually look into the Bible, what it talks about, what's described in the day of the Lord is that the mountains are going to melt like wax. Well, I've been to, was it the Valley of Fire? It's right outside of Las Vegas. That place looks like candles melted. It looks like a different, you know, I'm not one of those people who believe in like different planets, like they, you know, the science says, but I would say if you could imagine Mars in a movie, that's what that place looks like. It looks totally just alien to us. Well, I started to, you know, go more down the rabbit hole and my buddy started talking about all the things and he was combining like the fact that this place, this world we live in looks post-apocalyptic when you actually point out the things, the biblical locations that have been destroyed completely, you know, all the churches and the places Jesus told to repent have all been destroyed. And not only destroyed, but they had to excavate those places. And when they dug up the stuff, all the stuff was melted. And then when you actually take a look back at the scriptures, Jesus is telling them, the people he's talking to, that he's going to die, he's going to rise again, and then he's going to come back very soon. And he's telling everyone to repent because judgment's coming. So with that knowledge, you actually look into a little bit of history. What Jesus is pointing to in like Matthew 24, which is like a big end times prophecy chapter, he's prophesying that the Romans are going to destroy Jerusalem. They're going to destroy the temple. So all the modern Christians are looking for a third temple. When Jesus is literally talking about the temple he's pointing at, this temple is going to be destroyed. This place is going to be less desolate. And then all that stuff happened within the generation that he said it was going to happen in. He says, I think it's Matthew 24, verse, 34. He says that all these things will take place before this generation passes away. Within 40 years of him saying that, the temple was destroyed, Jerusalem was burned to the ground. And you're like, but they don't teach you that in church. You know, so like that happened. And so like the book of Revelation was written before that. And then all the places he was saying, repent or this is going to happen, all those places were destroyed.
I think that was a good point you made too with the show with Josh, as you were talking about the audience specificity when he's talking to the Pharisees and talking, you know, to all, like I remember you saying is like the letter to the Ephesians was to the people at Ephesus. So that it's audience context. He was talking to them. And when you're talking about a timeline, when Jesus is saying in this generation, most Christians, I grew up that way too, where they extrapolate that out and say this generation as in everybody until Jesus comes back. And if right. you're going to take it literally, that means that generation. So the end of the world back then, or the, you know, Jesus coming back, Rome being destroyed. I don't know what your timeline is on all that. And I want to talk about that too. But yeah, I just thought that was a good point you made that when, if you're going to take it literally, he's talking to them in that generation, not a generation 2000 years from now.
Well, right. Well, that I think I read a book from an author named Michael Heiser, and he wrote about a lot of the spiritual things in the Bible. But one of the things he said that actually really stuck with me the most was that the Bible was written for us, but not to us. You know, so the Bible is obviously, it's got prophetic books, it's got historical books, and it's got letters. You know, so there's different types of books, but obviously it's audience relevancy. So it's like if you and I were talking about the stuff that's going on in the world, we wouldn't set up everything by like explaining everything that's going on. There'd be an understanding between the two of us that you obviously know certain things and we'd only be talking about other things. So with like the modern church ignores all that, like it doesn't matter. But when you understand that specifically the gospels, right? So Jesus didn't write the book of Matthew, he didn't write the book of Luke, he didn't write the book of John, he didn't write the book of Mark. So people are writing the things he said to these people, right?
Wouldn't that be cool if he actually did write a book, though? That'd be awesome, the book of Jesus.
He sort of did when he, the book, the Revelation is the revelation of Jesus Christ. So it's like Jesus is telling John to give these messages to these churches. So like, if you really think about it, isn't that, it's obviously to them. You know, so he's, and one thing that really tripped me out when you finally realize this, the thing you wake up to is like in the book of Daniel. So Daniel chapter 9 is where a lot of people get all the end times prophecies from. So Daniel's getting these prophecies from Gabriel, or he's having a dream and then Gabriel's telling what it means. At one point, Gabriel says, shut up the words of this book until the end times. This is not for this generation. And so Daniel, you get the 70 weeks of like the 7 times 70. 7 times 70 would be 70 weeks, 7 years, 490 years. Well, it starts with the rebuilding of the temple or the decree to rebuild the temple. And then 490 years later, it's like really the end times. Well, so he's told to not tell everyone this stuff because it's not for them. It's for the end times. Well, when Jesus is on the earth, he's actually quoting the book of Daniel. And then you get to the book of Revelation, Revelation 22, it actually says, do not seal up the words of this book because the time is at hand. So if the book of Revelation was supposed to play out 2000 years later, it would say that. So when everything's really soon, and then if you read the letters, they're all saying that the Lord is coming back soon. And why do they think that? Because Jesus told them it would be in their generation. So they didn't know when, but they knew it was about to happen. So the point is, it's like that if Jesus said, send this letter to these people, and he says a very specific message to them, if it did not come true, well, what assurances would you have that it would be true to you? You know what I'm saying? Like if he didn't tell the truth to them, it's not true at all. You know, you can learn something from the message he said to them. And I'm not saying it's not for, that's why I said it's not to you, but it's for you. So with that knowledge, yeah, you look at historically, there's like historians like Tacitus and Josephus, famous Roman historians, were like literally wrote about that there were soldiers in the clouds when Jerusalem was at war with the Romans. The war was 42 months. So everyone talks about the 3.5 years. It was 1,260 days. The siege of Rome on Jerusalem was 42 months, just like it says in the Bible. And then you find out they desecrated the temple, all the stuff that happened in there. And so everyone's looking for a third temple. And this is what's crazy. And I think this is what kind of changed me on this was like, so what we're taught as the people who believe that all these are future events is the fact that there's going to be a rebuilt third temple, and then they have to start sacrificing again in order for them to stop sacrificing. You know, so everyone's talking about, oh, the red cows. Oh, they got red cows. Well, they don't have a building. They don't have any, they haven't been keeping the sacrificial law since the temple was destroyed back in the times of Jesus. So it's like, that's why I said, isn't it kind of funny to think they got to rebuild a temple to start sacrificing in order to stop sacrificing in order for it to be the end times? When, hello, that stuff happened.
Yeah. So what it made me think is that Revelation is not so much a prophetic book now, but more of a history of what happened already. So that's what made me think of it. I'm imagining close to what you're thinking, where it's something that already happened and it's history now. So where does that put us now? Like, as far as your knowledge of what goes on, like, let's say Jesus' second return already happened. Is this the great delusion that the elect might be deceived, that we think that Jesus is coming back for the second time, but he already did? And now we're just kind of, you know, Christians are out there twiddling their thumbs, waiting for Messiah to come back, not really doing anything. So where does that put us now? Like, what's the next thing that happens?
Well, the strong delusion that Paul talks about, and even Jesus talks about, you know, all but the elect will be deceived, is that was still back in those days. But where I believe we're at today is in Revelation chapter 20, it mentions, so basically Jesus comes back, there's the battle of Armageddon, and then he takes the false prophet and the beast, they're tossed into the lake of fire, Satan is put in the bottomless pit, and he's bound for 1,000 years. And so he's not allowed to deceive the nations again, except for a little while when he's let out. So that's where we get into like the idea of there is this time of peace and prosperity, and then there's a time where Satan is let out, and he's allowed to deceive the nations. He gathers them together, and eventually they go to war with Jesus in the camp of the saints. He brings all the people, like they march up the broad plain, and they're burned by fire. So this is the place where if you read your Bible, I had questions about that. I was thinking like, why? So at the end, why doesn't God toss that old serpent into the lake of fire too? Because it's the end, right? But he allows him to deceive everybody again. But of course, then the next question is, okay, so if Jesus is ruling like we're taught from Jerusalem and everything's great, how would the devil possibly deceive everyone? Well, maybe it's not like they're teaching you. And maybe that's why he can deceive you, is because it's not as cut and dry as that. And it's the fact that when you start to look at all the stuff, you start to look at all the lies we've been taught. Well, I mean, like, I think is, and you go down the rabbit hole and you think like, it's not what were we lied to about? It's like, what were we told the truth about? And it seems like everything we've been taught has either been a complete lie or it's a half truth. And then I said, you go back, and it really feels like to me at this point, our history is about 200 years old. You know, it's just about as old as America, right? Like, we're taught about this history that's very brief. And when you actually start to actually like, you know, kind of like try to understand it, you're like, the timeline of America doesn't make sense. And then you start to look at the buildings, they don't make sense. We're taught about, yeah, the people with the horses and buggies building stuff that we can't build today. And it's almost like the distraction is the pyramids. Everyone's like, how are the pyramids built? And then you're like, literally, they have a building in their town that's 200 or 300 years old that's better than anything else they've built in the last 200 to 300 years. And you're like, well, how did they do that with horse and buggy with no power tools? You know what I mean?
It's the age-old like question, and people go back to Tartaria and all that stuff. I think we're all talking about the same thing, no matter what you want to call it. A lot of people don't like that idea, or the mud floater, or you know, whatever. We talk about it all because we're just—it's interesting and it's newer, to us ideas. But like when I was talking about the deleting 1,000 years of history, could that possibly be the 1,000-year reign of Jesus that they're trying to hide, and then making it seem like that didn't happen, and there was the Dark Ages when they built all these crazy buildings, but it was the Dark Ages because to Satan that would be the Dark Ages, and so he came back and he's just tearing stuff up now.
Well, it's like, yeah, it's like in the book of Isaiah, it's when it's talking about like basically calling things that are good evil, good, you know, evil good, light inversion. dark and light. Yeah. So you have this Dark Ages where, yeah, they're not, don't worry about, don't look into that. Really not much happened. It's, you know, they built some cool churches and stuff like that, but it was really not all that great. They didn't like
cymatic frequencies and all that stuff. It's no big deal. Yeah. They didn't know what they were doing.
Well, yeah, they didn't, you know, but it's funny. Like, so there's this time, like, I think that's what, like, when you start to examine the stuff that we're like, well, how did they do that? And like, when you don't really know what you're looking at, you'll just kind of say, well, they did it somehow. I mean, it's there. And then you just won't think much further past it. But when you actually try to think about it, you're like, so when did they have time? Like, here's a good example. I think the best examples of this stuff is in the United States because our timeline is so small. Like, Europe is so old. So, like, you know, give somebody 1,000 years. Like, obviously, you can see stuff. Oh, well, I mean, I guess it took a long time to do it. But in the United States, you're like, when you go through, like, Washington, D.C., I'm from Virginia, so I've been up there many times. And I was like looking at the place and I'm like, what I would need to believe in order to believe this is you have to have a time of peace and prosperity, which if you know, the history we've been told is we had neither in this country for almost any time. You really think about it. We were at war with the British in the late 1700s. Then we went to war with them again in the early 1800s. Then we fought the Indians. Then we fought like the Spanish. Then we had a civil war. And then before you know it, it's like almost like World War I and the Great Depression, all this stuff. Meanwhile, the country expands westward. They build amazing structures all over the place before income tax, right? So where did the money come from? When you see like a place like ancient Rome, you'd say, how did they build that? Well, the Romans conquered the whole world. They fought in foreign wars. They brought plunder back to the country. And then they built their capital to look like amazing, right? They brought slaves, they bought gold. Okay, so we didn't win any foreign wars, at least we're taught back in those days. Literally, they talk about Washington, D.C. being burned down by the British in the War of 1810, them building buildings like twice, which is like, that's a common theme in this country where they built buildings two times because Chicago burned down, San Francisco burned down, St. Louis burned down. You know, Google whatever major city you know of and say, great fire. And sure enough, there was one.
Yep. So you're like, speaking our language right now. Ben loves this stuff. And he talks about, what year is it? The 1890s or 1860s? But he loves this stuff. That there's something that happened in that time period that is not what we're told.
How were there no people, though, to keep track of it? I guess, how is there not one message that got through to certain people?
The mainstream one.
No, but the secret message of, no, this is what really happened.
Well, here's possibly what it is. And I think, yeah, that's a good question. I mean, obviously, a lot of these questions are good. It's like people talk about right now that you can't find really old. It's hard to find books from before then. And sometimes there is. They're like, you might find murals, you might find paintings, obviously you might find certain writings here and there. But overall, yes, correct. There's one story. But when you actually look into the story, it's like it's very kind of unclear. Here's an example. It's like the Pantheon in Rome. So the Pantheon in Rome is this big building. It's got the biggest unsupported concrete dome in the world. If you go look it up on Wikipedia, it'll say it was built somewhere between in the first century and like the fifth century. So like the gap is like 600 years. So the truth is, like, when you actually look into history, it's really unclear. They even tell you that history is written by the winners, and then you find out, like, who are the winners? Well, yeah, Rockefeller, you got Carnegie, you got, you know, JP Morgan, you got Vanderbilt, you have all the people who take credit for all the infrastructure in the whole country. And they basically did it all in the 1800s. When, again, this is when the country's at war, there's a civil war, everything's
driving
happening.
Horses and buggies, but
they're doing all this stuff and they're inventing all this stuff at the exact same time. Things are being invented and they're becoming obsolete almost immediately. Like the technology just goes from like here to here. Like, I mean, if you believe what we're taught, they went from like making a car and with 100 years, they went to the moon.
Okay, so I'm gonna jump in here on this because we're watching the new show that they came out with on Apple TV. Thank you, Joe. Called Masters of the Air, and it's basically the third series that Tom Hanks and Spielberg made. They made Band of Brothers, and then they made
trust
Tom
them. Hanks.
Pacific, and then they made this one. And so it's a really fun dramatic show. But the conversation that we were having is, I go, the reason why I don't trust. And have that trust what we've been told and have that whole 1890 theory is because one of the veterans that is kind of promoted in the Marines is this guy that had some very exotic awards. He was given the highest award from France and received the Medal of Honor twice. He was in a war prior to World War One and then served in World War One and some of the follow-up stuff. And I go, can you imagine that guy's mind blow when the first war he was in was still like repeater rifles, there were no planes, there were no tanks and cannonballs. I go, and the very next war he's in about 20 years later, there are planes, tanks, mines, flamethrowers, biological weapons. I said, and of course, then it goes from there where World War II still had all of those elements. They were just better. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I go, with what you were talking about in how it just skyrocketed in invention. Well, that's not the only thing that skyrocketed. And I hate that nobody brings this up is like, according to their own numbers, which I feel like is kind of a contrary and conflicting thing that somewhat kind of brings out their lie is that to their own consensus at the turn of the century, there was roughly 1 billion people.
Yeah, I think I've read that. Yeah, in 1800 there was 1 billion people. In the first century there was 100 million.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Prime Day es el 16 y 17 de julio. Con las ofertas épicas exclusivas para miembros Prime, recibe el reconocimiento que tanto mereces.
¡Wow! ¡Gracias! Ni siquiera preparé un discurso.
Quisiera agradecer a mi familia, que siempre necesita cosas. También a Sam, mi repartidor, por entregarme todas mis ofertas increíbles tan rápido. ¡Te adoro, Sam! ¡Mua!
Compra ofertas en electrónicos, hogar y más este Prime Day, del 16 al 17 de julio.
Right. So for 1,000 or almost 2,000 years, according to their timeline, we only ever had up to 1 billion people. Mm-hmm. And then in 130 years, we skyrocketed to over 8 times that amount, if you believe the consensus nowadays. Now, everybody says, oh, it's jumping in modern medicine. I'm like, right. And you still have China that only lets you have one kid and then kills the rest of them. I'm not mm-hmm. saying that advances in medical and technology couldn't have aided with that. But that seems like a really, really big jump in numbers for 130 years versus however much history they're saying we had before that. That just doesn't make sense to me.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's another one where, like, you get into the old world stuff where there's you guys have probably seen this documentary. It's called the Lost History of Flat Earth.
And
I love how that starts off because they're showing like the very first pictures we have of these giant cities, and there's nobody in them. And then you have all these people who, like, almost like parrots, that say, "Oh, it's exposure. That's the reason you can't see anyone." But, like, literally during the contemporary times, they show like St. Petersburg with nobody in it. It looks like a city that would hold at least 1 million people. They'll show Paris and Paris and also London, and there's people in the pictures. So it ain't exposure. I mean, you have amazing grand cities, and then you have like mud on the streets, and there's no people there.
No, and I get that argument that a lot of people, photographers will jump in and say the vanilla sky thing comes because of those cameras, and they'll explain it. And I'm like, okay, I get that.
It's such but a
the,
lie.
The empty streets, though, that was what got me when we watched that documentary. And yeah, there was 9 hours of like mind torture because I'm like, what is this?
Well,
and actually, Iwaranon kind of came back and retracted a lot of the things he said. And that's fine. To his credit, he found something he didn't agree with and retracted. That's fine. But it's still weird to me when you look at those old photos and it's like, these buildings were already there. There's no way, like, it, even by the mainstream narrative, when Columbus supposedly came here, there was already people here.
Yeah,
so they didn't discover anything. They just came over to a new place where there was already people. And surprisingly, these buildings looked really similar to Roman, things. And there was pyramids also found around the world. So this was already here. In my opinion, a lot of this stuff was already here. And not to rag on white people, because I am one, but that group of colonists kind of came over and co-opted everything and said, yes, we built this. This is ours. Here's a World's Fair to show you that we did, because this is just how good we are. And forget everything else you're told. This was us. That's my general idea.
I think without question, there's good examples of this kind of stuff where, like, so we're taught, like, cities like Chicago, for instance, like, Chicago is obviously a major city. It always has been. And if you actually look up the history of Chicago, it's like basically like in the 1840s, there was like no one there. And then by the 1860s, it was a big city. But if you look at old maps, Chicago's on the map. Like, I think they called it Chicago and all this stuff, where it's like there's this place where Chicago is, and it was always this hub of something. And then, yeah, so you see old maps, and they're showing castles in different parts of the United States. They're showing castles in Africa and just different things. Like, so you have a map that's mostly accurate, or at least I guess maybe it's very accurate. It's like maybe the landscape's changed a bit. But, like, the point is you have cities that are landmarkers, even – like, I think the easiest to expose is the West, like cities like San Francisco. San Francisco basically had no people in it in 1840s, but literally it's written about in the 1830s about being a major port. Okay, so it's like a port that's known. And then when you finally do see pictures of these cities, they don't look new. There's no construction happening in the pictures. So if you think about it, like, what we're taught is these places were just built in like 10 years or less, but you see pictures of them and they look old. When you see the pictures, they look aged. The stones look aged. They don't show any like construction happening during the time when they've been being built.
And if that history is to be believed, I think we talked about this when we were, I think I was just over at your house, Joe, but how many times did like major parts of that city burn down and then get rebuilt? And it was within a phenomenal time frame. And you look at like those pictures that Joe was talking about with the cities, all of which were saying that roughly it was supposed to be about 500,000 people. But you look at how huge the cities are, how built up they are, like you said, how old they are. And there's not a single person in the streets, again, during a time when it would have been, you know, horse and buggy kind of era. And there's not one person. It's like those cities housed way more than what they're saying the consensus could hold. So where did all of them go? And when you're talking about the orphan trains, because I know you mentioned that earlier, that all makes sense with this whole like kind of cataclysmic mid-1800s thing. If you take the children that are the survivors of what we could assume was the adults, they would be roughly 30-ish by 1890s. They would have had their own children by that point. And kind of sounds like to me it was a repopulation push.
Yeah, these pictures—they don't. Even, there's not even so much as a horse turd on the streets. It's just empty. It looks like you came across a ghost town, and they were like, "Wow, look at this! Look at this whole city that people used to live in. We should move in here." And then that happened. And you know, like you said with Chicago, all of a sudden there's a million people there. So something's not adding up. I think we can all agree on that.
So you think the survivors of this war were just children?
Well, here's my thought process on that. It's like, yeah, when you finally start to see people, they look like aristocrats. They're all dressed super nice, guys in top hats, women in like these nice dresses and bonnets and bustles, and they look all like tourists. They're going through these big cities and they're just staring up at everything and they're looking like they're having the best time in the world. They don't look like they work in factories. They don't look like they work in fields. They don't look like they're doing any manual labor. So who's doing that kind of stuff? And I think that's when you have slaves. Orphan trains.
Black
well, they
people,
don't have
obviously.
Slaves, so they need to use children because there's whatever that class that was did that kind of work is not even there anymore. That's why you see kids in factories, kids in fields, kids working machinery that they're not even big enough to operate.
Cigarette hanging shipped. Out their mouth. Yeah.
They're getting shipped all around the world. And then so at the same time, so I believe the numbers are it's between 1860 and 1929. There's 250,000 kids on orphan trains in the United States. So think about that. Again, like you were saying about the population. So there's over 300 million people in the United States now. Think about how many people were in the United States in 1860 and during those times. So we're talking about at least multiply that number by at least 10 to explain how big that number actually is. And then at the same time, there's 150,000 people in insane asylums. So that's where you say, well, where are all the people telling the story? Well, maybe the math kind of makes
they
sense.
They got institutionalized.
Oh, okay.
Those might
there you
be, go. It would make sense. You have 150,000 people in the insane asylums. Could that account for the orphans? I mean, obviously there's wars going on at the same time, but that makes a lot of sense. And a lot of people, you can look this up in old newspapers. They were locking people up for religious extremism or religious fanaticism and stuff like that.
Yeah. Right.
Maybe they were talking about the stuff that happened not that long ago.
That makes sense. So that kind of answers my question, because that's where I was thinking, how is there not at least one culture that was passing this along or something?
But, they were in the loony bin.
I mean, I guess as soon as Satan's let out, he's allowed to deceive. So all bets are off at that point. I mean, anything can happen. So yeah, people telling the truth, they get locked up. You have kids, maybe he can make people forget everything as well. So they
that
don't even remember who they are.
With the loony bin thing is that they were the people that weren't brainwashed by whatever witchcraft was going on at the world's fairs or something like that. And they were like, no, this is not what happened. We remember what really happened. And they're like, you're insane. Go into the asylum.
So in line with everything that you just said, okay, so now take into account, like Joe said, with the global fairs, they also stopped teaching Flat Earth in 1890. You also have the first meeting, the first World Zionist Summit in 1890. There are too many high-level things happening without a middle population, which we now know is in the insane asylum, and then all of these children getting influxed to multiple different areas throughout the world. To me, that seems like a bunch of people that survived some shit, got together and decided, how are we going to move forward from here? And how do we keep it from ever happening again? I'm not saying that that's what happened, but to me, that kind of seems like it was a repopulation plan, which also, if you do that, would make sense for these big metropolis areas that are also completely void of people.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting if you think about the, like, learning a little bit of history, kind of almost like, you know, you start from obviously here and then you start to go backwards. Like, I think by like the 1960s, you have people like, what's his name? Henry Kissinger, who I guess he was the chief of staff, I think, of
a reprehensible human being.
Yeah, he was not a good guy, but he's writing about that population control. He's already writing about that the world population is getting too big. So if you think about it, there's like, you go from a billion people like 100 years ago, and then you have too many people in the world. That's their problem. It's almost like they had not enough people to do the slave labor they wanted. And then they had, oh, well, gosh, we don't want this many of them. We got to get rid of them now. And
no, I mean, they like, made, so, the, so we, the grasshoppers so our whole lives, made too many ants.
Well, you know, I think there's people talk about that. I think there's a movie like The Bug's Life.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
it's like they realize, well, if they ever realized how many more there are, and that we could not control them.
Right.
And that, that's like my theory with this whole thing is that they came up with a plan to control the narrative so that whatever happened wouldn't happen again. How do you do that? You separate the younger generations from the people that are still alive. You institutionalize the older ones that know the truth who are still alive, and you come up with a game plan that allows everybody to kind of start fresh, and then you start teaching them a different variation of history other than what has been taught up until that moment. That is why and then with that, you end up getting, well, how we have all this awesome architecture that we're being told was, you know, this old or was built by this. And we're told our history for this plot of land is this. You start seeing the mixture of ethnicities a lot in the end of the 1800s. And it would also make sense that with a new generation coming up with the Civil War and everything else, Civil War that happened, it's like, you start to see a lot more of a blending and almost people moving towards what we would call a progressive society than it was and what we're taught ever happened before that, whether it be slavery or a lot of other things. You have these things that were ingrained in every culture, supposedly up until that time when all of a sudden the light bulb went up around the world to stop slavery in first world countries. All around the same time that now we're having constant wars globally, I think that all of that ties in together with the end of the 1800s.
Yeah, for sure. And if you think about it, so if you have that modern Christian eschatology that everything is about to happen, it's about to be the end, and you're looking forward the whole time, maybe you don't look back at the stuff that already happened.
And that's even more pertinent now with the 24-hour news cycle. You're so focused on a Kardashian or the Hawktua girl or, you know, whatever the current meme of the day is that nobody's got time to look back at all this stupid stuff.
I just
stuff.
Heard about like, that today.
Me too.
Yeah, so you're looking at that all this stuff is crazy, so Jesus is about to come back. But you never consider that the stuff you've been looking forward to already happened a long time ago. And as a Christian, I'm saying like to not get it twisted. I'm not saying that like there's no salvation or anything like that, but I'm saying like, if you're looking forward to the invisible rapture, whether that was even ever a real biblical concept or not, that happened a long time ago. So like that it allows you to be complacent. They teach you to support Israel no matter what. And then don't worry, you're going to be gone when anything is real bad. So like, just let it get bad until then.
You know what this reminds me of? QAnon, just trust the process, trust the plan, sit back, do nothing, you know, just sit on your thumb and just watch it play out. Cause it's a movie. And then I'm not saying all Christians, obviously you're out there doing something and speaking out about it, but it doesn't, like you said, it makes them complacent and they're just chilling, just waiting for that rapture day. Lord's going to take me soon, which I, like you said, I don't think that was ever a biblical concept from what I can tell. The Bible doesn't mention a rapture at all.
No, I think what it was meant to be. And I think that there's verses I know where they get it from because I believed it before, but I believe that it's like, so there's a resurrection after Jesus comes back, you know? Right. So like, just like Jesus was resurrected and he had a spiritual, physical body. That's what happens to everybody who's in Christ. Everybody gets resurrected, and then the good ones go to heaven, and the bad ones go to
the bad place.
The bad place we don't even want to talk about. But no, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say what put the nail in the coffin for a rapture idea for me was one verse that said, "It is appointed to all men once to die." So does that take out the rapture people? Do they not die? And that's what people are waiting for. They're waiting for nobody wants to die. So they're waiting for the rapture when they're like, oh, I don't have to die. I just get poofed up to heaven. No, it says in the same book you're reading that it's appointed to all men once to die. And after this, the judgment. So
you're all going to die
in some way.
That's a great point, because even I started to think about it when it's like, so there's even, so it's Matthew 16, I believe it's 28. He says that you know, some of you standing here won't taste death until you see the Son of Man coming into his kingdom. So he's,
but you'll still taste
again,
death.
So again, he's saying that they're going to, you know, like they're going to see him come back. So again, he's talking about them, but he's also saying some of you are not going to taste death until this. So some of them are going to be dead before this happens. And then some are going to be dead after it happens, because he's not saying some of you are never going to die. You know, he doesn't, even Paul says, he doesn't say, I'll tell you a mystery. We won't all sleep. He doesn't say we won't all die. He says that, right. And I believe biblically, if you read in the Old Testament, that when you died, you went to Sheol and you knew nothing. Like that was a biblical concept, like that the dead knew nothing.
And is that like after, a holding cell?
Well, I think it's
purgatory.
Like, well, it's, you know, so obviously our modern language has simplified a lot of
right.
nuanced terms like heaven and hell. So like Sheol was like what you might say is hell, but there was a bad part and there was a, you know, and there was just like a part that was everyone.
It was like an okay part.
Yeah, it was like,
it was like an office job.
It was
kind
a so-so
you were down
like
there
our
and
show.
You down there and you slept. You didn't do anything. But like obviously there's a place where like the saints went, and then there was a place where the bad people went. And then there was even like a lower level, like that's when you get like the bottomless pit and like the worst parts of hell, where like the fallen angels were chained up. But no, I think that after Jesus, that's why he said he came down into the earth. And then you think about he's him setting the captives free. So the people who were chained up by death, he resurrected them and took them to paradise. So I think that whole concept where, yeah, you're absolutely nailed it, is the fact that that phrase everyone talks about, everyone wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. And that's exactly why people won't accept the things that I'm saying today, even though it's very plain Jesus is talking to the people he's talking to. So then if you don't want to accept that, well, then obviously you're right for all kinds of deception, because again, you're looking forward to this thing and you're allowing everything else to happen. And you're trusting the guy behind the pulpit. You're trusting the guy in the White House. Maybe not so much, but like,
no.
at some point people were. And you're trusting the people, the history teacher, you're trusting the science teacher. And you're thinking like, these people have the doctors. Oh, these people all have our best interests.
The experts.
When interestingly enough, guys like Rockefeller, they're in charge of like the medical business, like the modern medical
right.
business, the modern school system. So all the things you've been taught and the things that you've been, you know, led to believe, you know, the energy sector, the health sector, the education sector, and eventually, obviously, these people are all in bed with like the war industrial complex and all the things.
Yeah. And what does it sound like to you? It sounds like the beast system, doesn't it?
So why didn't Jesus give us a book? Why didn't he give us a book to follow?
Where's our instruction manual, man?
No, I'm just, so hear me out. Do you think that it's because he knew that Satan was going to be in charge for this period, and he was like, okay, they get this old book and they can take from it what I have said? Because he does say so many good things about going within, like your body is your temple and God is within you. You don't really need to go to church. It's not a bad thing to go to church. I'm not faulting anyone for doing that, but you will always have a connection to God no matter what. Jesus says that so many times throughout the Bible, and there's lots of other crazy stuff in there, but one of the main points is that you can always connect yourself to God and be good no matter what. Just do the right thing. It's pretty easy.
Well, I mean, it also says that God has revealed himself to all men, so
To completely support that point, Jen, it also says in the Bible, and it was supposed to be as a deviation from the traditional teachings, that before Christ came, you needed to do all of these rituals to kind of sanctify yourself and keep yourself holy. And once that was opened up and he was like, well, my people refused me, so I'm opening it up to the Gentiles. This message is for everybody. He said, where two or three people are gathered in my name, there am I in the midst. So you don't have to repeat rituals and ritualistic tendencies to be able to connect with God. That was the entire message. You can do that on your own. You can do that in a small gathering. The idea was that if you can do what we're doing here, you could call this church. No, it's not a physical church, but it is what we're doing. We are talking with each other and bouncing these ideas off of each other to gain perspective and be able to grow. You can do that with anybody.
Yeah, and this is, just to clarify, this isn't to say that you are God yourself. I think
right.
That's where I would draw the line at blasphemy.
That's an important distinction.
I know. And even though I think there is a Bible verse where somebody says, haven't I told you ye are gods? But that's probably taken out of context, or it's not even a real verse. Yeah. But it's no, I would draw the line there where, oh, you are God yourself. And now have you tried creating something? Have you tried making a man or like a universe or something? No, probably not. So I don't think
you're God. Jesus does talk about all the things we can do as humans to be like him. In Mark 11:20, my favorite Bible verse. But anyway, I've said it numerous times. But
okay.
God.
No.
I was gonna say that. So why hasn't he given us a book to kind of map out this?
Yeah, to help us out.
Well, because the righteous live by faith. Okay, so if mm-hmm. you understand like that, the Bible starts basically. You know, once you get past like Noah and the flood, you get to Abraham. And so Abraham's given a promise by God. And so that's counted to him righteousness by believing this promise that God is going to make a great nation out of him. And through him, all nations are going to prosper, right? And so Abraham, there's no law then, right? He goes where God tells him to go because he's going to give his ancestors this land. So everything is kind of pointing to this promise. And then so obviously, if you think about like the way the Bible's written, it's like, you have Abraham, and then you have the times of the apostles, and everybody's kind of like looking toward the cross, and that's where salvation is. So Jesus is the culmination of all the prophecies and the promises from God. It's still the same way. And so obviously, yeah, like you said, it was a time for, you know, Abraham's seed, but it was all, again, like some people like get into like this, obviously the genealogies, what Paul talks against is that it's not about who your parents are. It's about your belief in God. So like, if you wanted to be like Abraham, you know, they said, go get circumcised and you can do all the things, or you can go to the land and you can live as a sojourner in the land of Israel and you can be one of them if you did what they said. I mean, again, like there's the example, like in Jericho, you have Rahab, the prostitute, is in the line of Jesus. You know, she helps the spies out. She becomes like them. And like literally, I mean, that's all you need to really know. I think that
it wasn't a badass, so that makes sense.
Well, I mean, it's like is she feared? You know, the beginning of wisdom is fearing the Lord, right? So she knew what they did when they were leaving Egypt, and so she feared them. She helped them. She came back, and then she was one of them. And so, point being is, it's about belief. You know, so like if you believe in Jesus, and I've often wondered this, like, okay, so if what the church generally teaches is that Jesus is going to come back one day and then he's going to physically reign in Jerusalem, like the one that they tell us is Jerusalem, then how would you have faith in that situation? You know, because obviously there's people, not everyone dies in the book of Revelation. I think that's another misconception about when it says the end of the world. Some translations say the end of the age. But again, like, have you ever watched apocalyptic movies? When they say the world ended, you know, yeah, exactly. So like the point is like, You could say the world ended without the world being destroyed physically. Like,
yeah, the world as you know it ended.
Right.
Correct. Right. So like the world ends and then people start again. You know, they come out of their shelters and they start to, you know, do what they've got to do. Well, the world ended in 70 AD for the people the Bible was written to.
Right.
And so, but after that, that the message went to all the nations. And it mentions in Colossians 1:23 that every creature under heaven has heard the gospel, the eternal gospel now. So now what do? There's no temple. There's none of this. Well, the righteous live by faith. So it's kind of like when it comes down to it, it comes from a belief in what God has promised us. And obviously living in faith after that, you know, like doing what God has taught you to do. And like, obviously letting your faith, the Holy Spirit, lead you to what's right in this time. But I mean, I really think it's like, that's the whole point, is like that you look at the Bible and there's a lot of imperfect people in there who believed, and then they did things because they believed. Their faith led them to do things, and they messed up at times, but they never doubted, and they walked in faith. And so I think the same thing is true today, where like, oh, well, what do we do? What, we're not under a law. There's not like a list of things you're supposed to do. And if there was, it wouldn't be living in faith. So like we have enough, I believe, to, again, like, you know, what's funny is like, I think about this more and more lately, is the fact that people take for granted that so many people are Christians in this world. If you believe what just the Bible says, it ends kind of rough for the Christians, right? Or even like the first century Christians, So how did the gospel really spread all around the nations? How did Christianity spread to become the world's religion if it wasn't all true? If like Jesus didn't come back and do the things he said he was.
Listen to this good news. It's going to be really sucky later for you. Isn't that great? Spread it around with your friends.
Well, we're taught that Constantine, by the time he decided that it was going to be the religion of the world, that it was this small sect. But I mean, do you believe that now? You know what I mean? Like, do you really believe that? That, like, even think about like the calendar and like the years we like. So we're taught like in BC, it's like it's counting down to something. Okay, what's it counting down to? It's counting down to when Jesus was born. Isn't that interesting, right? And so like everything then is BC, and then everything out there is AD, which is the year of our Lord. Yeah. So you have this and this. And so the whole world just said, that's fine, we'll go with it. This guy named Jesus, who from many people believe he was just some guy who, a prophet or some guy who just got killed by the Romans, unless he was who he said he was. You know, like you really
nobody
think about
counts
it.
Before Buddha or before Krishna. There's no BK or BB. No,
right. So you think about it, like, so what would have had to, so obviously the Romans are the one who crucified him. So what would have had to happen for the whole world to turn on their head and just say, all right, this Jesus guy is legit, let's just go with this. And then after that is when you have this dark ages, right? So it's like very similar. It's very short after this stuff. Actually, it's a thing to look up in history, if you guys haven't looked this up, is 536 was like the worst year ever. There's a bunch of YouTube videos about it. There was 18 months of darkness. The plague was running rampant. Again, you think about it. I think they said there was about 150 million people around this time, around 500 AD.
Sounds like Revelation, no?
50 million people died of the plague in a certain amount of time. 18 months of darkness. The plague was killing a bunch of people. There was wars at the time. And then shortly after that, they called them the Theodosian laws were enacted in like around the world. Those laws said that all the other religions were illegal and you had to be a Christian. That's interesting timing, isn't it? And then, so the Dark Ages start, guess what? Some people say they started 536 AD.
They're like, okay, we'll follow you. It's fine. We'll try to make everyone else do it too.
Well, so you think about it, like, so that's a right around when they say, and again, like, as you said, people say they added 1,000 years. I believe that it might not be so simple as that, but I do believe that people have proved over, you know, like, I guess there's a guy, I forgot what his name is, Philanco, I think. He's looked at like basically based on the constellations and like the kind of like the Maserat, the zodiac, that the ages are messed with. They have added time, and he's shown that certain historical figures and stories around the world match up, and they're kind of more like they spread certain events out. So it could be closer, but yeah, it makes sense that these things happened around a certain time. And if the devil wanted to lie about it, what would he do? Maybe he'd spread them out along our timeline, because if they're all happening around the same time, well, then it would look suspiciously like the Book of Revelation. But if they spread them out, it'd be just enough cover for, you know, obviously me first Christians to just say, oh, well, obviously we're the generation where Jesus is going to come back to. We're the important ones, right? Not the ones who are getting fed the lines and everything.
Right. So
how much time do you think Satan has?
That's we were talking about that earlier, but I was kind of wondering that too, where it's like, what are we doing then right now? What are we waiting for or looking forward to? Are we waiting for, like, I don't even know, because I don't know past Revelation. What's your idea on that?
Well, so biblically on the timeline, what you would have is you have, again, Satan gathers the nation. Satan's let out. He deceives the nation, and he gathers the nations to make war against Jesus and the saints. So maybe that's why there's no specific time mentioned, because you think even similarly in the Bible, it talks about that like certain places are going to be judged. Think of like Nineveh. So Nineveh is going to be judged. He sends Jonah to go tell them to repent. Well, they do. So then they get more time. Well, eventually Nineveh gets judged. Even it mentions in Sodom and Gomorrah in the Book of Genesis, it mentions that God tells Abraham their time is not yet. Like basically, like, I'm not going to judge them yet. And later he judges them. people in the land of Canaan, same thing. So maybe it's a situation where when Satan has really gathered the nations, when they're like almost like a Tower of Babel situation where they're literally of one mind, they're coming together to do one thing. Maybe that's when God judges. But people have speculated this, and this is, and I don't think this is a bad theory. 1776, founding of America, the founding of the Illuminati. You have the Statue of Liberty. I don't know if you guys have seen this stuff where it's like Statue of Liberty, interestingly enough, has a chain around her ankle. Yeah.
There's a lot of weird stuff with that thing.
It looks like it looks an awful lot like this Lucifer statue. They're very similar. It's like it's even think about like this, the what is the mantra for the Statue of Liberty is light illuminating the world. You think you have the Dark Ages, you have the Age of Enlightenment. It's about liberty. Even you think about like the founding of America, it's you have the Gadsden flag, you know, the coiled serpent, don't tread on me. Like literally in Matthew 10, I think it's 10:19, I believe, you know, it's right after he says Satan fell like lightning from heaven. He says, I give you the ability to tread on serpents and scorpions. The Gadsden flag says, don't tread on me. It's literally a coiled serpent. And so that is the that's the mantra of the rebellion of the colonists against the British. Like that, that's what we're taught. I mean, so like, you think we're Christian nations, we've been taught. Wouldn't they know that that's kind of an antichrist message right there? Like, don't tread on me. Like, we should be one. I don't want to represent myself by a snake. If you're Christian, I don't think you would. So the point is, it makes sense that if, okay, let's just say, we know that the mid-1800s looks really weird in pictures, but we don't really have pictures before that. So there's something that happened early 1800s, maybe late 1700s. Revolutions all around, the French Revolution too, right around the same time. There's wars everywhere.
Wars and rumors of wars.
There's lots of things happening. And so people have speculated this, that if the millennial reigns 1,000 years, what if a short season is a quarter of that? 250 years, that would put us right about now, you know, like from 1776 to, you know, like,
so do you think that's
2026
coming back to like current events and all that, Agenda 2030, wherever you want to go with all that kind of stuff, is it because they know their time is short? Like they know they're coming up against a wall?
I mean, I think again, like, I would not have probably been vocal on social media if I didn't feel something change. And so like, what does that mean? I mean, again, like I'm speaking with as much like, you know, truth as I can, that I can't say for sure. I would say that there's all this focus on the new age that's coming. You know, you think about like people in the church don't really understand what the new age means. It means like astronomical ages, like, that they were looking forward to this age where the end of Pisces was over. And if you think about Pisces is the Jesus fish, right? The Jesus
fish.
And
what's next? Aquarius.
So then you have the water bringer. And it's like guys like Aleister Crowley said it was going to be the age of Horus when they entered Aquarius. And so Horus, the Illuminati eyeball, kind of an avatar for Satan. Is that what he was referring to? Well, it certainly seems like there's people who say this, and again, like I'm not sure if this is true, that the age changed, I think, sometime between like December 2020 and like January 2021. And if you think about what happened in the world when that stuff, remember when they said the new normal, the old normal is not coming
the new
back.
Normal.
There's this shift that happened, and everybody I think could feel it that the way the system just changed and everything has shifted. It does really seem like that with the chaos, even between the elections and all that stuff, things just went haywire. And it was almost like we used to be a little more subtle with this stuff, but we don't even care anymore because it has to happen now. So could that mean that we are coming to the end of something? Absolutely. Does that mean we are for sure? No, it does not mean like it. I would be just like the people who are saying the rapture is going to be tomorrow if I said, oh, well, it's not the rapture, but it's just the same thing for as far as we're concerned. It's just like the tribulation. I don't know that, but I mean, I think that as everybody who goes to the grocery store knows, like, whatever's happening right now is not sustainable anymore, at least for what we're doing. And I think that if you believe in the idea of, like, maybe even like the pre-trib stuff where you're saying, oh gosh, they're going to have a one world government run by the Antichrist, and that's why you have this new world order agenda. Fair enough. I mean, that's what I said. I was kind of in that mindset. Similarly, in the way of the short season, Satan still gathers the nations together at some point. So it still seems like it fits. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you still have this combination of the nations coming together. And what they need, I think, is, and somebody like who's just, it seems so obvious to me, they could not do that if America stands independent, right? So they kind of have to sabotage this place in order to do that. And what was frightening when I came to this realization, when you see those pictures of the orphan trains, you're like, that's so weird. It's just like, it's hard to understand that these kids were going around to repopulate these cities. But then if you think about it, think about a modern day situation. Think about our southern border, where you literally have caravans of people coming here. And if you think about it, I've thought this for a long time, they don't want anything to do with us middle class people. They want people like us to go away because we still believe in freedom and our rights, and we question them and all this kind of stuff. What if they could get rid of us, and then they could get their own new orphan trains? Who could they could tell them anything they wanted to about this place? They don't even speak the language. They could teach them the language, and then they could teach them a different version of history. Who built those buildings? Oh, we did in 1 year. Last year, we built all that stuff that you see right now. How great are you? You want to be like us? Here.
Welcome to America. Yeah, and I actually appreciate, before we wrap up here, I wanted to get your view on, I heard you mention that you kind of are thinking cyclic, like there's the cyclic nature of history and the world and everything. Where does that put us? There's different ideas on the cyclic nature of stuff, and there's the yugas. A lot of people talk about that, the yuga cycles and all that stuff. I think that's just another idea for the cycle. I mean, everything in nature is a cycle, so it stands to reason that maybe history would also be a cycle. But there's got to be, is there an end to it, or is it just, does it repeat again? Like you were saying, with like the basically migrant trains coming in here right now, does this civilization get wiped out? Is that part of the small season of Satan, where he's just wiping out civilizations and re-brainwashing everybody every couple hundred years?
I mean, obviously it says in Ecclesiastes, there's nothing new under the sun. What was will be again. It says there's no memory of past times. There'll be no remember of this place at some point. And so, like, I mean, that's the whole phrase that those who are ignorant of history will be doomed to repeat it. So obviously we know there's a lot of ignorant people. So that's why they wouldn't want you to know what happened before. I think that it sort of makes sense that obviously if you're God, if you want to kind of give everyone the kind of same kind of chance, that maybe things are, the more they change, the more they stay the same. And there's these kind of these patterns of like generations and people that they get close to God, and obviously they rebel, or God, they're under oppression. They seek God, God delivers them, and eventually it's this repeating cycle. So I think that's why, like, maybe it's possible that some of the stuff in Revelation is coming back because it's similar at the end again. Or it could be just they're playing out of the end. The enemy has the playbook. They can manipulate people. It's like the tail wagging the dog. They're kind of showing the signs to scare people. You know, you can understand, like, they're trying to manipulate us by fear, keeping us in this constant trauma state. But I mean, I have wondered this, that, like, even in the book of Revelation, it mentions at the end that when there's this holy city, you know, at the very end, it says no evil will be able to enter this place. No unclean thing will be able to enter the gates. Well, it's almost like, well, if they're all in the lake of fire, you know, like, is there, you know, like, isn't that kind of redundant to say they can't come in? Right. Or maybe there's this repeating cycle of, like, you don't go to the holy gates until, almost like the thing you thought when you were a little kid, till you die. You know, so maybe this place where we live is the old earth, and when we die, we'll see the new heaven and new earth. And this place is again, it's like the testing ground. You know, who's worthy to go to the pearly gates and who's going to go down to the hot lake.
Literally, you know? A Hunger Games situation we got going on here.
Well, it's like it's a faith test. I mean, obviously, who's going to choose God when like you can't see him? Again, if we're living by faith, you can't really have faith in the things you can see. You have to have faith in the things you can't see. So, like, that's why the God can use the devil, even as bad as it sounds, when he's got something much better when you choose him.
Yeah, it's 100% fear-based. If you are afraid and someone reaches their hand out and says, I'll help you, but you know God could help you, will you take that physical hand or will you trust in God? And I think that's Amen. What Satan's counting on.
Well, yeah.
And I think so God is too. So,
yeah, well, it's the whole idea of like that Jesus says that those who would seek to save their lives will lose it, and those who would lose their lives for my sake will find it. So, like, yeah, it's kind of like, it's way easy to say what you believe when everything is good, but when the chips are down, what do you actually believe in? You know, like what will you do?
When you're in a panic moment, what are you gonna do?
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's basically it's easy to virtue signal, but when it comes down to actually figuring out what you actually believe, it might be a little different. You might fold a little easier than you thought you would, but I mean, hopefully not. I think everybody's learned a lot from the last few years, and you know, people like JT here coming out and sharing what he knows with us, and everybody, you know, figuring things out on their own. And I mean, not to close with the Bible verse, but it also says lean not to your own understanding. So don't trust yourself on any of this. Look to JT. No, I'm just kidding.
No, look, definitely don't do that. Definitely don't do that. Yeah. I would say that a lot of people, like, obviously when you start talking about these things, because this will go against what their pastor taught them. So that, you know, you get called the false teacher, false prophet, whatever you want to say. I'm saying that if you guys are left with anything from me today, is audience relevancy, read your Bible. Again, if you read your Bible, that I can talk to you about the history stuff, the funny stuff in history and all the weird stuff. But how I really came to this conclusion was that Jesus was talking to the people he was talking to, and he was saying to them that he was coming back soon. So how did all the other things, you know, that's what people get questioned us all that. Well, so when did this happen? But when did this happen in the book of Revelation? When did this happen? I was like, I don't know. Again, if I can't tell you I trust history for sure, all I'm saying is I believe if Jesus said he was coming back then, I don't know how it all worked out, but I believe what he said. So if you go into the reading your Bible with that mindset, I'm not sure whatever happened after he said this, but I know that he tells the truth and I know he's not a liar. So what happened after that? Well, that's the journey that I'm on right now, is that I'm going to try to find the things that people ask me about. But I think that, again, this is faith, so I don't think we'll ever know for sure, but yeah, trust no man. It will every word of God be true, as if every man was a liar. And I said, you live by that, and I think you'll be all right.
No, and I appreciate you saying that I don't know. That's my favorite thing to hear from people that come on and spread what they've researched, is I don't know on this question. Because if you start to just talk out of your butt and, you know, no, then I don't trust you. All of a sudden, I don't trust anybody who says they know everything.
Well,
or knows the
especially from
answer.
A religious perspective, when every church we've been to, they're just like, I know this. I know this. This is how you should be. And I just don't feel like that's the way that a human should talk to another human. If it was Jesus, sure, no big deal. But
Well, no, the problem
you should
is
be
that
able to say, I'm not sure. This is how I interpreted it. How does this feel to you?
Right. So a lot of the time, how we grew up in our church was, this is what it means. This is true. And you're like, okay. But in the same breath, they'll say, but it's a personal journey. It's your own personal journey, your personal relationship. So don't trust me, but also this is true. And this is what and it's like, no, this is your interpretation. There's a reason there's 100 different factions of Christianity, is because they disagree on little tiny things here and there. That's fine. Most of it doesn't really have, it's not that important. Like, you disagree on which day you should hold church service on or whatever.
And that shouldn't affect other people. If you don't agree with that,
and
it doesn't mean anything.
If that's what your interpretation of the Bible is, then sure, go to church on Saturday. Like, nobody cares. It's fine.
Well, I like to always leave it like this. There's things that I will argue about, and I will say that the Bible says this. And you know, so like, so you're not like, this is not about what I say. I'll say, I can show you book, chapter, verse. This is what it says, and I'm going to say that it's not my opinion. Truth comes from God. It does not come from me. If it came from me, then it could just change whatever I want it to be. But it came from God. So there's things that I know what the Bible says. There's things that I think, and there's things that I speculate about. And so I want you to be clear about, I want you to be clear about when I say, so like when I tell you this is true, I want you to believe me. So when I say I think this, you guys can take it or you can leave it. And if I say I'm going to speculate wildly, I don't care if you disagree. I don't think we should argue too much about the things we're speculating about, because again, it's like, you know, the things we don't really know.
It's a waste of time.
But yeah, I'm absolutely like, I wholeheartedly agree with that. I respect somebody so less when they sound so definitive about things. Like, how could you know that? And if you don't bring the receipts, then I'm going to question everything you said after that. So like, I never want to be that person that I'm just like you guys. I'm just like every person who's listening to this. I once was curious about things and I looked them up. And am I sure about everything I say? No. But again, like, I mean, that's part of what this is. We'll never
it's
know.
It's part of life. It's part of the journey.
No, and that's fine. And I love that when you can say, I don't know if this is true or not, but here's at least my thought process and what I came across to come to this conclusion.
Yeah, agree or don't, whatever.
Take it or leave it, but this is why I came to this conclusion. At least if you can show that. There's so many people out there, false prophets in the last days, if you want to go that far, but there's so many people that are like, this is what's true and this is what I believe. And you're like, well, how'd you come to that conclusion? That's just true. Jesus is coming back on this date. That's the first first thing to be like, oh, you're setting dates.
Those
okay,
are at least
turn
great
off.
Entertainment, though. I mean, come on. That's it hilarious is entertaining. To watch.
But yeah, as we get out of here, though, thanks, Josh Monday, for hooking us up with JT here. And
yeah, thank you so much for coming on.
If there's one thing I've taken out of listening to the Josh Monday show is that if you are a Bible-believing Christian, first of all, you should be a conspiracy theorist, 100%. And also, if you're a Christian, you should believe the earth is flat. Listen to Josh Monday's podcast, because he, biblical cosmology shows, if you're a Christian, the earth is flat. I'm sorry. Look into it. And that's going to piss some people off, but that's fine. Also, listen to, I had to thank Sean and Matt from Tub Turkey Podcast for mentioning us on their show. And check out their AI music channel. It's Alone and Demon on YouTube. I'll put links to that in the show notes. But tell everybody on our channel where they can find you, JT, before we get out of here.
Well, like I said, I'm on kind of all the social media apps, but I would say that I'm doing the majority of my stuff on YouTube these days. And so like, if you want to, especially if you want to hear more about the stuff we're talking about, we talk about this subject all the time. And again, as I was saying, like the reason I would hope you could maybe even at least come on the journey with me is the fact that I was wrong about this stuff before. And we're like, so we've kind of opened up the whole new can of like, so if this is true, we're re-examining everything. And so all the questions you're saying, well, what about this? Where's Jesus at? What all this? We talk about that. We talk about all that kind of stuff. So yeah. So JT follows JC on YouTube. I'm on Instagram, TikTok. I'm on Facebook. My name's Joe Telford on there. So it's like, we don't have my JT follows JC on there. It's my real name. Yeah. So
we're
going to
dox
well.
You now.
But yeah. And also I talk about lots more stuff. We have a documentary called Ancient Angels. It's a play on ancient aliens, the Nephilim stuff, the megaliths, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, nice.
So I've long been a history questioner, you know, a history skeptic. So yeah, we can talk about all the other stuff and giants, angels, demons, all the like. So yeah, obviously appreciate you guys having me on, man. This is a lot of fun.
Hell yeah. Absolutely. So I'm going to put all your link tree and all your links and stuff like that in there. But I do want to get you back on. We didn't get a chance tonight, but I do want to talk to you about your stance on UFOs and aliens. But we'll save that for another time, because that's a whole podcast in itself.
Got lots to say about that.
All right. Well, thanks, man. I appreciate it. Ben, I know you have to go to bed. So night night. Jen, thanks for joining us tonight. We appreciate you being here. The fans miss you.
JT, it was really nice meeting you. Thanks for coming on. And
absolutely.
This was a really good conversation. A lot of times we usually have people on that fall into one of two categories. Either they don't believe the Bible and don't know much about it, or they believe the Bible and they are exactly what you described with how they were raised and how we were all raised. And so it's really refreshing to have people like you and Josh that are in the middle and are willing to, you know, shoot conspiracies that are definitely not normal for the church. So nice to meet you. Thanks for coming on. I had a really good time with you.
All right. Appreciate it, man. Yeah, nice to meet you, man.
All right. Everybody have a great night. Rockfin, YouTube, audio. Peace.
Thank you for listening to Legit Bad. Please address all content grievances to gofuckyourself@yourmom.com. See you next week.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.